Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. It was one of the most shocking, salacious, and sensational crimes in history. Sex, lies, murder, it literally had it all. The murder of Travis Alexander and the first-degree murder trial of his mysterious ex-girlfriend, Jodi Arias. And now the subject of the latest installment of the record-breaking American murder mystery franchise, Leading Crime Network Investigation Discovery, examines the explosive investigation and trial of Jodi Arias for the murder of Travis Alexander. In the special 3-night event, Jodi Arias, An American Murder Mystery, premiering Monday, January 14th, 10 Eastern, 9 Central, and all-new exclusive interviews with key players, featured investigative journalist and legal analyst Beth Karras, who blogged daily from the Arias courtroom, known for her nearly two decades of on-the-spot legal reporting from courthouses all across the country, covering high-profile cases such as Casey Anthony, Jerry Sandusky, Drew Peterson, Conrad Murray, the O.J. robbery trial, and Kobe Bryant. Beth brings a unique perspective, not only a skilled reporter, also a trial attorney, spending 8 years as an assistant district attorney in New York City under legendary D.A. Robert Morgenthau. She's appeared as a legal expert on virtually every cable and network news program, and now, featured in Jodi Arias, An American Murder Mystery and Investigation Discovery, Beth Karras, with us on This Week in America. Hi, Beth. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Rick. That was a very nice introduction.
And that only touches the surface. We'll talk more about maybe on later programs all that you've done and the unique perspective you bring. And this crime, as I mentioned, was salacious. In fact, it redefined salacious, I think. It did have it all. When did you first become interested in the case? When did it grab your attention?
Well, you know, it really wasn't on the national radar when it happened. In fact, when Jodi Arias got arrested in mid-July 2008, all eyes were on Orlando, Florida, because it's the same time that Casey Anthony was reported missing. She was reported missing the exact same day, July 15th, and Casey is arrested on July 16th. So Jodi and Casey were both developing on separate sides of the country at exactly the same time, July 2008. And so I ended up focusing on Orlando, but I was aware of this Jodi Arias case. But it really got on my radar post her arrest when she had changed her story from the intruder theory that she was there, but two intruders killed Travis Alexander, to I was there and I killed him, to self-defense. So I was aware of it, but again, my attention was in Orlando because they were both happening at the same time.
Looking back to early June, the day of the murder, Travis Alexander, this was a brutal murder. He was stabbed, his throat slit, he was shot. This was a brutal murder.
It was very personal. The way this man was sliced and diced and killed and shot, somebody was showing rage. It was clearly very personal, right? It wasn't an execution-style killing, right? Where it's sort of a cleaner kill.
Interesting. In the beginning,
and
family members... Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, looking at the crime scene photos, and I recall the lead detective, Steve Flores, saying it was one of the most vicious crime scenes he had ever been to, right? Murder scenes. The blood was everywhere in that bathroom. And as I would do my reports periodically, throughout every day of the trial, but... I explain how blood tells a story. There are spatter and drips and smears, and the blood was all over the bathroom, so you could almost track where he was, how he was, that he was standing at the sink, and his cut hands were smearing blood, and he's spitting up blood. He's being stabbed in the back at the same time. He's been stabbed in the heart, so he's now spitting blood. You could kind of see what's happening, and the big swath of smear on the on his master bathroom wall, hallway wall, he's trying to go down the hall, maybe get out the door. He collapses at the threshold of the bedroom where his throat is cut because he wasn't dead yet, right? Oh, my God, because he was almost out the door. She needed to make sure he's dead before he got out the door because she never could have escaped for 5 days before his body's found and then 6 weeks before she's arrested if he had actually made it out the bedroom door.
You know, right away, family members and friends pointed fingers at Arias. They had broken up. They had an open relationship for a while. It was a very interesting relationship, which will come out in the three-part miniseries on Investigation Discovery. But that indicates that they really felt, in fact, some thought she was crazy to begin with. They obviously felt that she was capable of not only murder, but a really brutal murder.
Yes. His friends immediately told the police to take a look at her. And they did, but they didn't have the evidence for a while. They would have built a case against her, but there is, if there's one smoking gun in this case, it's this camera that was left in the washing machine.
Yes.
That had deleted photos, which they were able to recover because the memory card in the camera that had been through the wash wasn't destroyed. And for the life of me, I don't know why she left that camera behind. Maybe she scooped it up in the clothing and bedding and threw them in the washer as she was exiting the house, not realizing the camera was there, but she should have taken that memory card and buried it in the sand in the desert. But that memory card places her, you know, at the scene. So on the date and time. Now, no one knew that at the time that the friends were saying to the police, you need to look at Jodi Arias. So they were looking for contacts for her to have, like, been in Arizona, and they're talking to her by phone. She's in California, and she's saying, yeah, no, I haven't seen him since April. The murder was June 4th, 2008. So I haven't seen him since April. So they needed to place her at the house. They needed to place her in Mesa, Arizona, and that came on June 19th when they were able to recover these deleted photos from the camera, but they don't tell her. They don't tell her that. She doesn't know, and then she gets arrested, and they try to get her to confess, and she's not confessing, even when confronted with the photos of herself at his house. There were sexual photos, and then there were a few accidental photos taken during the murder. All this comes out in the series, and all this was part of the trial. But it was fascinating. You know, this is not a whodunit case, right? She admits she did it.
Yes.
That she did it in self-defense. But it's a why she did it, and the lies she told, and the premeditation, and there are so many elements that are fascinating, even though we know she did it.
I actually went back in some of the clips and played a couple of times. Her demeanor during this, she originally called the police to offer her assistance, left a message, and Detective Flores calls her back, explains who he is, and she says, oh, hey, how are you? This is like two old friends talking. Her demeanor was absolutely incredible.
Yes. She's not normal, right? I mean, she definitely has a diagnosis that is somewhere on, you know, in the DSM-5, whatever the latest manual is for mental illnesses. I mean, it came out at trial, a personality disorder. I mean, the defense said PTSD, but by the second trial, they're saying, no, it is personality disorder. I mean, something's not right there. And she thought she was smarter than everyone else. She's a smart woman. She was very articulate. What a waste. What a waste that she's spending her life in prison, because had she not taken this bad turn in her life, she might have been a great, you know, functioning, contributing member of society, because she's an articulate, bright woman.
Let's talk about the trial. By the way, the series we're talking about on Investigation Discovery, the three-part miniseries, Jodi Arias, an American Murder Mystery, premiering Sunday, January 14th, 3 nights, 10 Eastern, 9 Central, only on Investigation Discovery. Featured investigative journalist Beth Karras, our guest on the program. You said that people were really ready for this trial, and let me tell you, it didn't disappoint. This was a 5-month trial, and you never knew from day to day, and you were right there maybe from hour to hour, what was going to happen.
I'll tell you, we knew the story in broad strokes. But we didn't know how it was going to unfold. And, of course, we didn't know how explosive, not just some of the evidence would be, but the way the attorneys conducted themselves. Juan Martinez handled this case for the state of Arizona, right? He was the prosecutor, deputy county attorney. He's a small man in stature, but, wow, he is a bulldog in the courtroom, a giant. And that is discussed in the series as well. People loved him because he resonated with a lot of viewers. Jurors liked him as well. But he was asking the questions we wanted asked, and he did it in a nasty way when Jody's on the stand, right? That was a highly anticipated time when she took the stand. Of course, we were sick of her by the end because she was on the stand for 18 days. A defendant on the stand for 18 days is unbelievable.
That's incredible.
Her lawyers in direct examination kind of dragged out the story and had to be very, very thorough, doing a good job, but when Juan Martinez got up there to cross-examine her, I mean, her demeanor changed, and she really took him on head-to-head. I mean, she was difficult to cross-examine, but he did a good job.
Just when you think you've seen it all, and he writes a book afterwards and says in the book that one of the jurors, and I believe the foreman of the jury, actually fell in love with Jodi Arias, and he was unwilling to give her the death penalty. Is that story true?
I never heard the fell in love. He just felt that there was some merit to her self-defense claim, not that he had been necessarily physically abusive, but maybe psychologically abusive.
Right.
And he convicted her of first-degree murder, for sure, but he just felt that a life sentence was sufficient and not death. But there were four jurors. He wasn't alone. Four jurors voted for life. Four jurors would not go with death in the first trial. That's why there was a retrial just on the penalty phase.
Yeah, and the penalty phase was interesting unto itself. Talk about where she is now, and I know they went through a number of appeals. Talk about where she is now in the aftermath for not only her, but everybody else involved in this crime.
Well, she's in Perryville Prison, which has a section for women. It's for women in Arizona, and that's outside of Phoenix. So that's where she's going to be for her natural life, for the rest of her life. Now, her appeal actually is still being filed. It's had a lot of setbacks because the court reporter had some issues that caused delays in getting the trial record transcribed and submitted. The appellate court has to have the trial record for both trials. So that's being finalized now, and there's in 2018. This year is the briefing schedule for the lawyer. So hopefully the briefs in her first appeal will be filed this year, and maybe there'll be a decision next year. I doubt there'll be one this year. So that's going on. The prosecutor had a couple of bar complaints against him, but he has not been found to have engaged in misconduct in this case or other cases. So that's sort of a non-issue. Her attorney, her lead attorney, Kirk Nurmi, has given up his law license because he wrote a book about Jodi Arias, and he was criticized highly for that ethically because of some of the things he said in there, which may have violated attorney-client privilege. He claims not, but he gave up his license, so he's no longer practicing. She has different attorneys for her appeal. Jodi's father passed away last year, the second half of last year, the summer, the fall. That's Bill Arias. He's in the investigation discovery series. Part of a video is played of him being interviewed by the police shortly after Jodi's arrest. Both mom and dad, her parents, are in there. They did not testify at the trial, and those videos were not introduced at the trial. So that's something. It's an interesting little color to see. In this story, because they did not speak out.
It's a riveting story. Did you learn any? I got 30 seconds left here. Joan Velez Mitchell said you know probably more about the Jodi Arias case than anyone else. Did you learn a different perspective? Anything new from the series?
Well, I know pretty much everything there is to know, I think, without visiting Jodi in prison to get an update from her. So I don't recall anything new except for seeing Bill and Sandy Arias, Jodi's parents. To me, I don't know that I had ever watched all of their interview with the police, and snippets are played, and I think there are some new things that I hadn't seen before played by them. So in this series, so that to me was interesting. But I think the series does a great job of recapping the whole story from the crime to the last trial, and having been an observer in the courtroom and talking to people outside the courtroom, I think, if you think you know the story, you need to watch the series because you are going to see things you either forgot or that you didn't know.
And it's on Investigation Discovery, the three-part miniseries, Jodi Arias, an American Murder Mystery, premiering Sunday, January 14th, 3 nights, 10 Eastern, 9 Central. With us, investigative journalist Beth Karras. Beth, thank you so much for being with us on the program.
My pleasure. Anytime.
You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.